Oh, I see. Is this where the young elitist hipsters take on the ancient dodgy in the way types?
Oh, no, I love your band.
I love your band too.
You don't know my band. It's called Sexual Race.
I'm the 45-year-old narc.
I don't read that Maximum Rock and Roll. I don't read that Flip Side. I don't watch that TV set.
You ever get the feeling that LA is dead?
Not deader than any other place.
That's
not
true.
Not deader than some people's minds. Okay, boy, wrap it up. I'm cold, I'm wet, and I'm busy selling out, so I gotta get backstage to my women and my cocaine. So what else do you want to know?
Dear Anne, you used to be fun, at least funny, at least gently and amusingly insane. But girlfriend, you've changed. The thousand-yard stare you've acquired in the last couple of years says lonely nights, too much wine, and insecurity about the future of your career. Where to now, my sweet fascist?
Listen to that fucking stupid asshole redneck telling me to get a haircut and go home. Listen to that fuckhead. Hey, go home, dear, eh? Go home and leave me so I can drink and fucking be non-existent, dear. I don't want to be anything. I want to just fucking be dead and drunk and stupid, dear. Okay? So we're going to cut our hair and we're going to get some guns and we're going to fuck you right in your ass.
Most of my work comes from outrage. It puts enough fire in my blood to where I can get up and have to write something. That's why I don't write it like, hi girl, it's nice to see you again. You know, like so many of these bands, I just look at them and just go like, how dare you get on a stage and waste people's time with this insipid crap, you know?
I've said it once, I'll say it a million times. Henry Rollins is my spirit animal. Ego and Vice, episode 128.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly, you're a slacker.
Hey, this is Mike. This is Ego and Vice, episode 128. Thank you so much for coming back. Hey, I took a week off because I went snow chasing. What does that mean? It means it's the end of the season. And I wanted to find some places to go snowboarding. So I ended up in Tremblant a couple times and places like that. So, you know, When you have winters like this, when there's like no snow on the ground, you have to find the snow. You have to go to the snow. So I had no time to do much but chase my passion, my other passion, which is the snowboarding. And I had a great time. I had a great season. Weird winter. But man, every time I went to the mountains, I remembered why I love snowboarding so much. I can't even explain how much I love it. It is the most cathartic, cleansing, therapeutic, fun, exciting, exhilaratingly exhausting, stress relieving, anxiety relieving, pastime, hobby, passion. Whenever I'm on the mountain, all I got to do is just close my eyes and everything just kind of goes away. Anyway, enough about me. I'm back at it now because the season's over, so be it. On the show this week, I have a couple of repeat guests, but never at the same time. I have Ken Ketchum and I have Deirdre Dooley. Ken has been on the show before. He has been in the Ottawa music scene forever. Deirdre has been in the Ottawa music scene forever. Back in the day, she played in Ra Ra Riot. Now she plays in a band called Wet for Days. Ken has played in bands such as Moral Hazard, Four Stroke, The Limburg Babies, just to name a few. Like, real experience and talent and one heck of a resume from these two. And I'm super happy to have them on. And we are going to talk about their project, their band called Cultural Treason. Soon as we get back from one of their songs, I'll be back with Ken and Deirdre. This is Cultural Treason. This is Ego and Vice. Hey, we're back. This is episode 128. This is Ego and Vice. As promised in the intro, I have two members of the local band Cultural Treason, some friends of mine. I have Deirdre. I have Ken. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. Thanks for having us over.
I'm super happy you're here. As we were talking about off mic, as they say, that's another showbiz term. Off mic. Ken was on the podcast in 2018, it's crazy, episode 17. Just gush about how great that experience was, please.
That was a lot of fun. It was also, I seem to recall that you and I had a few wobbly pops that night.
Back then, I think so,
that
yep.
was before you changed some habits. So, so I think we were like, drinking and talking and drinking and talking.
No.
And then, you know, I think that you were originally planning for about an hour long interview and I think it turned into two. You ended up having to run on, but I shared that link with a few people and got some pretty interesting responses, all positive, but that was a lot of fun.
So very good.
When you invited me back, I thought I'd definitely want to come. And of course, Deirdre's been here more recently.
Yeah, you're both like, yep, veterans of Ego and Vice. Deirdre is also in the band Wet for Days.
That's right. And we got together last year. No,
let's look that up. Here we go. Wet for Days, episode 89. That was on, well, it aired on August 2022.
Yeah, so 2 years ago.
Anyway, so Cultural Treason. Ken, when you were on the first time, I think that band was just budding back in 2018, because back then you were, I believe you're in four stroke for one thing.
So when we, when I came on in 2018, that was when Cultural Treason was doing a short hiatus because we'd been jamming for about 6-8 months. Then we got our first show. We opened up for DOA at our first show, and then around that time, Deirdre decided that she wanted to go off to Ireland and find herself or something. So, we ended up going into Dave's drum shop and recording like a quickie demo, which we basically did, and then sort of minutes later, Deirdre just sort of skedaddled. And so I think when I was chatting to you then, that was when we were waiting impatiently for her to get back and just kind of shopping the demo around a little bit, trying to get some interest in getting some shows when she got back.
Yeah, it's supposed to be gone for 4 months, and you're great. Always just like, okay, well, I'll see you when you get back. I came back after 2 months, so.
Did you find yourself?
Oh, I always knew myself.
Okay. She's like, I already know you. I'm going home. That's cool. During that time, too, I think it was the Limburg Babies that was going on.
Yeah, so sort of for me personally, in 20, basically, I was in Four Stroke and the Limburg Babies, and then Four Stroke ended in 2016, and I kind of continued playing bass in the Limburg Babies, and then about a year after Four Stroke ended, I got interested in putting something new together, and so sort of at that time, basically talked with Deirdre and Clayton, who'd been in the last lineup of Four Stroke. So the three of us started going. We tried out one bass player, and then we got this guy Mats, who Mats Norlin, who used to be in Psycho Punch from Sweden. So, yeah. So that the four of us basically were the first lineup, and I learned a hell of a lot from being in a band with Mats.
Hmm. Yeah, and actually, Ken asked me if I wanted to be in a band at one of your shows because I was going to go see Sarah.
Oh, Goat Show.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I was out supporting Sarah, seeing you guys, and Ken was like, "Hey, you doing stuff?" I was like, yeah, you know, I'm always like playing a little bit of music. He's like, but are you in bands? I was like, no, not right now. He's like, do you want to be in a band? I was like, yeah, sure, let's do it.
That was my next question: is how did you guys meet?
Yeah, at your show.
I mean, well, we
at a goat show. That's where everyone met.
There you go. You're the reason for it.
I thought that was funny.
Maybe I'm the center of the universe and I don't even know it.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Probably not. Probably not.
We'll just go with it.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with that.
Yeah. No, but I mean, we'd known each other because like Four Stroke and Rah Rah Riot used to play together like fairly frequently.
Oh, yeah.
And then sort of.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. But I remember kind of like the first time, because I'm horrible at recognizing people out of context. And I was at the sort of the day that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission report got released. I was out at an event at City Hall, and I bumped into you there, and you recognized me, and I just sort of thought, like, were you someone from work? And they're like, well, you know, music scene. And then I was like, oh, yeah, you're the drummer for Rah Rah Riot. So I think we pretty much stayed in contact sporadically after that.
I honestly don't really remember. I'm bad with, like, years. I'll just be like, yeah, I was in this band, and I played with Four Stroke. And I know you were in that band. So when we actually met, I don't know. Like, you know, you play so many shows and you so many people.
Pinpoint the general vicinity of time.
Somewhere in these 4 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I met Sarah at a Rah Rah Riot show. I saw you guys at De Cuff. I don't know if I've ever told that story where we were looking for another guitar player and we just went to see Rah Rah Riot because Paul, the bass player, Paulie, he knew somebody. And I remember Sarah was sitting there and I took like a video of her and I'm like, that's the one, she has to be in her band. And when you guys were done, I went up to her and I was drunk and I was like, you're super good. And Sarah was just like, thanks. And I'm like, I didn't know what to say to her. So Polly's like, okay, so if you ever want to jam or anything like that. And then we just kind of started talking. But yeah, it was years later where she joined the band. But yeah, that was the first time. Rawr, Rawr, that's cool. That was a great band. That was fun. And you're playing with Sarah now in Wet for Days. That's so cool. That's so cool. So Culture Cheesin', you said that okay, maybe I'm getting all the bands mixed up. I shouldn't have listened to the podcast today of you, because now I'm getting my facts mixed up. All I have in my mind is The Vagrants, Vicious Dick, Snatch Bandits, Moral Hazard, one of your many bag of tricks of bands. So when Cultural Treason started going and started moving, let's talk about the history of that and actually when it just started giving her. Once Deirdre was in the band and you started playing, how was it?
It was great. It was a lot of fun. And like I said, so I'd been in Four Stroke with Clayton before, and I hadn't been in a band with Deirdre, but I find that sort of just the other day in practice, like you were kind of commenting like almost every time, you know, if I make up a riff, just sort of whatever she plays along, I'm like, yeah, that's it. And then I think there's two songs where I'm like, actually, can you do something else? And she's really unused to...
It's very rare. I can see it in his face while I'm playing. I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
It's not like an upset. It's like a thinking, like, you know, when they're playing their guitar and they're thinking of their lyrics and they're just kind of in the zone, and then they make this face and they kind of look at me and I'm like, oh, okay, all right. I'll play around with this.
Yeah, it's pretty rare. There must come a time too, like you guys have been playing together for a long time now. No? 7 years,
seven
8 years.
Is it yeah. really been 7 years?
I mean, you know, and there was interruption during COVID, but we kept on sort of like, we try to respect the like the limitations, and then we'd kind of like, let's go for it, and we'd sneak over to our practice space, and then. I think afterwards, I thought it was a bit more of a gray area, and I found out afterwards, like, yeah, we really shouldn't have been doing that, but...
Keep it on the hush-hush.
Yeah, you can do.
And we're, like, the OG members, so I think it's kind of cool that we're the two here.
Yeah. Right. Do you want to name the other members of the band, since they're not here?
Yeah, so sure. So basically, what happened is, I was mentioning Motz was in the original lineup, and...
Clayton.
He and Clayton and Motz just kind of short. Actually, this is a funny story. So around the end of 2019, Motz just sort of like came to us and he said, "I really like playing with you guys, but sort of my musical interests are going in a different direction. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to drop out of this and do something else." And so I got in touch with this friend of mine, Ian. Someone who our paths didn't cross when we both lived in Vancouver, but we had friends in common, and then we had bandmates in common for a while. He used to be in International Maniacs Institute. He was in Four Stroke for 3 months when we recorded our last album. And so then when Motz dropped out, I'm like, you know, hey Ian, do you want to come on? So he agrees to come on. He comes with us, practices like I think 3 or 4 times. And then we got like a really good show offer. I forget what show this was. It might have been the Forgotten Rebels. So like, okay, you know, Ian, we're gonna teach you 12 songs, like learn them, and then we'll play the set, and then we'll sort of like worry about kind of training you up on the rest of the material afterwards. Mm-hmm. So we go and we play the show. Probably like 2 days before we play that show, we got like another offer for like literally 4 weeks later. So and then I think we missed a practice or two. So the show went really well, and then we didn't really have any time to teach Ian any new songs. So we're like, okay, we're just going to play the same set again 4 weeks later. And so
he refers to that set.
We went and like banged it out again. And then there was a third show that we were doing for tragic reasons, really. Our friend of the scene, Paul Lacasse, like a lot of people know him. He passed away in December of 2019, and we got invited to play his memorial show in January of 2020. So we were doing that one as well. So again, it was like, okay, Ian, we're just gonna play the same set again. Yeah. No one's really gonna care. Like people are there for Polly and his friends and family. But let's just do the set. So we played that set, and then after playing that show, we sort of said, look, okay, you know, we're going to take some time. We're going to write some new material. We're going to teach Ian the rest of the songs. And we're not going to play any more shows until that happens. Well, I mean, you know what happened.
And then, careful what you wish for is kind of what happened. Yeah, I know. Did you, how did you stay busy?
Did you want to go first?
Yeah.
I don't even
I think now that the pandemic is over, I think
I think it's okay
to talk about it. It's just because you can look at it in hindsight, right? Instead of being stuck in it and being all like in that, well, I'm not doing nothing. But how was the pandemic for being in a band and personal lives and stuff? How did you get through it?
Oh, well, like we kind of snuck in when we probably shouldn't have, you know, kept it going.
Mm-hmm.
I actually used to play I kept my music by playing outside with my dad and people from the Ottawa Celtic Folk Night that I play with.
Okay.
We played at Britannia Beach. It was like really nice. It was that like just enough music to kind of keep going when we probably weren't allowed to do that too. It wasn't like a formal, it was like people, we just told a couple people to come meet us and play music. And
what do you play also, in that? What do you, drums?
Yeah, so I play the Irish Bowron. It's like a circle drum.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I think I knew that. I think I actually knew that. I just forgot. Very interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So that kept me going, and I had a kid. So my son, at the beginning of when everything got locked down, he was 9 months old.
Mm.
So, I mean,
they'll keep you busy on the best day, don't know.
Look back and say it was tough, but
lots
of
time.
I don't even really remember it, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's all parenthood music can all be tough.
Yeah, it's strange. It's kind of
the way you compartmentalize it.
Uh-huh.
People are like, it was so terrible. Oh my god. I'm like, I mean, yeah, it was, but
I'm
still here.
me and my girlfriend, we talk about how great the pandemic was for a lot of things, because, you know, I like the people I like, but sometimes I don't like the people I don't like. Like, I just don't like being around crowds and general public and stuff like that. And
great for being in a band.
Yeah, and well,
love to perform, but like when you're done with being around people, you're done.
Oh, I would just drink myself into a bubble. I wouldn't even.
Oh, you'd be in your.
Yeah,
bubble.
That was part of my coping mechanism. I would just drink myself silly to do all the stuff when I wasn't on stage. The only problem is it really fucked up what I was doing on stage. So
it does
didn't really
do
work
that.
Out too well. Yeah. So, as a songwriter. Do you write songs, Deirdre?
Nope, just drumming.
As a songwriter, I know this is a great question. Did the pandemic make you more creative or less creative? Because it's gone both ways in the question when I ask it.
That is a good one, yeah.
It's interesting because I think for me, like, I'd go in waves. And I always kind of go in waves. Like Deirdre knows that, like, sometimes, you know, a few months will go by and, like, every week I'm showing up with, like, you know, a new riff or something that maybe that we turn into or something, or maybe that we just kind of play around with and then put aside. But there are other times when they like 5 or 6 months will go by and inspiration will strike. And I mean, like, we've got a couple, like more than a couple dozen songs. So it's like, you know, we can and especially, like, there's some that sort of always have top spot on the set list, so it's not like we need to be, like, constantly churning out new stuff, but
after 7 years it's kind of nice. That's definitely my favorite part of the night, where it's like we run through the set list and I'm like, okay, great, everybody's all warmed up, and I'm like, what do you got, what's the juicy, could the dream riff, what came to you randomly that you just, like, scratched down on a crappy phone recording, give it to me.
Well, and so that, I think that was the thing, is that, like, early in COVID, because a lot of time for me writing, like, I'm more creative when I'm doing other stuff musically, and then sort of other things flow. So I think at first I didn't really have anything, and then later on I was just doing more, like I have this crappy little acoustic guitar that I play around with at home, and then I was like coming up with some riffs and doing stuff, but it was really up and down. I mean, for me during the pandemic, like, I was biking tons. I decided to see if my skateboarding skills had improved at all during, like, the decade plus that I hadn't been doing any. No, they didn't. I ended up, like, late in the pandemic, I took up cross-country skiing, and I've now become, like, really, really enthusiastic for it, just time for this like non-winter that we've just
Right. I relate with the snowboard, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think just sort of like really kind of getting into outdoor recreation, because otherwise like I'm in a relatively small apartment and so being stuck at home was not something that I really relished.
Yeah, I can relate to that too, because in 2021, well, I guess January 2022, I had snowboarded where I was when I used to live in Thunder Bay, and I lived in Ottawa for 25 years and I never touched my snowboard. And then I started again in January 2022, and it's like my favorite thing. And I dream about it all winter, until even when I'm doing it in the summertime, all I want to do is go snowboarding. It's like obsessive. Like I love it so much. I couldn't write songs very well in the pandemic, because I had nothing to write about. Like I need to be, I don't know, something. Doing things. Yeah, and I have trouble writing on the best day anyway. And I think I was kind of hard on myself, because everyone was saying, "Oh, it must be nice being writing songs during the pandemic. It must be getting tons done." And I'd be like, not though. I'm not getting anything done.
Are you just writing the song that everyone else is writing? So you don't want to write it?
I'm bored.
Well, I find at this stage in my life I write the same song every time, and I realized I've written the same song my entire life, more or less. So it's just getting harder to find things to talk about, to sing about, I think. It's nobody wants to hear my complaints. Like fucking tuna went up 50 cents at Wilson's. You know, that kind of shit. Fuck you, Galen Weston. Nobody wants to hear that shit. Maybe they do. I don't know.
No, I'm very much in that sort of like I struggle often with lyrics, because it's just, you know, there are certain themes that are just so overdone, particularly in punk rock. And so I'm just that I want to say something interesting, or even if I'm saying something that's not particularly interesting or original, mm-hmm. say something that's not interesting or original, but say in a way that's interesting or original, or that sort of like looks at something from a different perspective. But yeah, I mean, there's really no need for sort of more piling on of the cliches.
Yeah. Yeah. I've gone as far as like watched like songwriting videos on like YouTube and stuff, just looking for kind of little hints and stuff like that. And I found a couple of neat little chorus tidbits, and also some things where it's just like, even if you think it's stupid, like don't refine lyrics too much. Sometimes when you just write it down, just leave it. And after you sing it a few times, you're like, yeah, that's actually pretty good. And if you kick the shit out of yourself for that one line over and over again, it's just, you might give up on it.
So I think it was, I don't know if you've read Chris Walter's bio of the Dayglows.
No.
But apparently Cretan, like every set of lyrics, he writes it out. It's always his first take. So, yeah, so every single Dayglow abortion song is basically his first take. Oof,
that's confidence I don't have. Or not even confident. That's just I don't give a fuck I don't have. Yeah, I couldn't do that. Yeah.
I am not that, and even like a lot of the time for me when I'm writing, I'll sort of like, I remember it was funny, you were referencing Moral Hazard, like that band was kind of interesting, because I'd often write, like I'd write the first verse and the chorus, and then I'd hand it over to Steve, the singer at the time, and be like, you finish this, right? Like you know, I've given you a structure. I mean, I wouldn't do that with every song, but there were a lot of songs where I was like, you know, hey, I've got a verse, I got a chorus, you can finish this.
Yeah.
But even a lot of the time, I kind of come up with certain elements of something enough that I kind of know the framework I want to work within. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'll fill in the details later. I'm not a detail-oriented person.
I was a kind of a tyrant and goat. Like everything had to be kind of like the way I wanted it and stuff, but I had the guys that were very, they were just kind of like, okay, whatever you want, you know.
That's like, why you're able to do that. You didn't have another one of you.
Yeah, like Mike and Polly would just be like, "What do you want me to do?"
All right,
and I'd stop and do da da da, and he'd okay, and he'd get it, and I'd say, "There it is," and shit like that, and it was great until it wasn't. Fuck those guys. No, I can't. I'll cut that out. Anyway, yeah. So, how do you find time for two bands?
It's just what I love to do. I technically count it as three, because I also do the Irish music.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I have 3 days a week, but it's more flexible. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So if I have like a packed week and a show, I'll drop out the Wednesday, as like for parents. Like, there's just something that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Busy kids, sick, life. Sarah's on a bi-weekly schedule with her kid, too. Like, it's, you know, single mom. Like, it's just too hard. So it's nice to be a little more flexible. But I find, like, you know, week goes by, 2 weeks. If I miss enough practices, I feel it, you know.
Is Cultural Treason your only gig right now?
It is. So Lindbergh Babies, we played what we didn't know at the time would be our last show. I think it was in, like, I'm going to say May of 2022. And Greg Kerr, the second guitar player in the band, died, like, shortly after then. I think it was June or July of that year. And we sort of, during the summer, we kind of kept not practicing, and then eventually we were going to have a band meeting, and basically sort of two of them, I was good to continue, like, maybe find another guitar player, and two of the members were saying, like this is kind of a punctuating point for me. So
Rosie.
Yeah. Rosie LaRose. So that's when that ended. And I mean, obviously, like totally tragic. Like, I mean, that guy should still be with us today. And amazing guitar player, like just a really solid human being, like a really good guy. I think for me, two things I'm actually really happy about, is first of all, that we did get a last show in, because like Cultural Treason, Lindbergh kept practicing through the pandemic, and we'd mm-hmm. sort of like we'd start and then we'd stop and we'd start and we'd stop. That was the only show we played after things opened up, but it was good to be able to do that. And then the other thing was, he came out to the first show that Cultural Treason did after the pandemic. We were opening up for DOA again. Yeah. Funnily enough, yeah. And that was his first time that he'd managed to make it out, just like sort of conflicting schedules. He hadn't made it out. And I remember like him talking to us afterwards and him like being really complimentary about the band and about the songs. And that meant a lot to me, coming from him, like someone who I had respected musically from like when I'd first seen him in the Phantom Shifters when I first moved to Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
So that felt really good. But, you know, so obviously a very kind of small good element into something that otherwise just sucks.
As far as recording goes, Cultural Treason just released a new EP, I guess. You want to call it a record or EP or whatever?
I mean, it's
too long for an EP.
Okay.
I'd say it's an album. It's a lot of material. 10 songs.
Okay.
called The Growing Lie. We recorded it sort of basically, I think we started recording about a year ago, and then
yeah.
sort of our secret weapon is that, so I was mentioning Ian replacing Mott's, and then Clayton, who was the other
we didn't do a proper shout out. We talked about Ian, and then there's a perfect segue into our secret weapon.
Yeah. So
our secret weapon is Chris.
Yeah. So Clayton was was the other founding member, but I guess around, it wasn't much, it was probably about 2 years ago. Like
I'm terrible with dates. You gotta go to this guy for all dates.
But he basically timeline. Said, you know what, I'm he's really taken up drumming. What's the name of the band that he's Society? He's drumming for this band.
I was so excited when he told me. I wasn't even. Society? I was so sad that he was leaving the band because he's an amazing guitarist. But when he told me he was leaving to drum, I was like, "Yay!"
He's like, "You're growing up now," or something.
And he's like, "I don't know why I didn't do it years ago. Like, I'm loving it." And I was like, "So he was just beaming.
You're one of us."
That beautiful, like, creative energy in this like tiny, fierce, bearded man.
But anyhow, so he decided that he wanted to. to basically focus on that, and so we looked around, and I ended up talking to Chris Cook.
She's
been in lots of different bands over the years. Right now he's in he's also in 86 It, who are a great powerful three piece. But so, and one of the things about Chris is he records bands, like he generally does the recordings for the bands that he's in. He actually, the last Four Stroke album that, that kind of only really got released on Bandcamp, but, he recorded that for us. He, we were trying to talk to him to record our demo back in 2017, but just, we couldn't find a time that worked for everyone. But anyhow, so like we invited him to play because we needed a guitar player, but then after he learned the songs, it's like, you know, so we need to record. And he's like, well, you know, I can help out there. So it was sort of, because we had the producer in the band, it meant that we took a bit of a longer process to record. We'd record and then we kind of like kept going back and, you know, as one does. But I think, you know, it was a bit different because we didn't feel like, you know, there's like, the meter's running type of thing. So we could kind of keep on going until we got things right. And then, we were probably pretty much done, late last fall. And then I had a death in the family. And so just kind of stepped away from everything for a couple months. But then just sort of earlier this year, we said, okay, you know what, ready, let's put it out. We sort of picked, we'd recorded 13 songs, so we decided to put 10 on the album. Mm-hmm. Sequenced it up, threw it on Bandcamp, and we'll see if we do anything physical with it or not. But like right now, it's the main point is that sort of when we're going to be playing shows or when we're going to be kind of trying to get people interested in us, we have something that's, you know, reflecting who's in the band now, reflecting the songs that we're playing now. It's not something that we recorded like 2 weeks after our first show. Mm-hmm. 7 years ago. So it's nice that we finally have something fresher out there.
Good. Physical copies of things are getting harder and harder to do now. I think, I don't know, I heard like the wait for vinyl is like a year at no. some places, something like that. It's crazy.
People are into tapes now.
Yeah.
Are CDs making a comeback? Like,
who knows?
Why does anyone want CDs?
I don't think it, because there's nowhere to play them anymore. Like, my girlfriend just got a new car. She got a new Subaru.
Yeah, there's
and
no...
she made a point. She's like, look, no CD player. And
your
like,
computer?
I was like, I didn't even think about it, right? It was crazy. Yeah,
you
so...
have to get the special drive or the CDs for your computer.
How do you feel about cassette tapes? I made cassettes like 5 years ago for Goat. I thought they were hilarious, but... now they're like, actually, there's places that make professional, like, here's my tape.
So the thing for me is, like, I am a Gen Xer. So when I first got really into music, I bought everything on cassette.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the worst format. Like totally. Just, it absolutely. It disintegrates so fast. They,
I guess so, yeah.
Like, you know, when I compare to... I've got music on vinyl, on CD, and
you're talking like functional. There's like an aesthetic for just the vintage-ness
of it. The aesthetic of cassettes is crappy too.
Do you remember? And it depend on the machine you had. If you had like a shitty machine and it ate the tape, remember when you had to delicately like pull it out of the teeth of the fucking thing?
Yeah,
it was all folded and crinkled, and it'd be like, well,
we're old. We're so old now.
And you roll it back up, and it's all in there. But when you played it, it would like.
Yep.
It would fuck, the audio would be fucked in that
part.
So
I literally bought a cassette last night. My friend's band Critical Witness played a house show in town and they had a cassette, so I'm like, you know what? Love you guys, gonna buy the cassette, but like I'm gonna download it on Bandcamp. I'm probably never gonna. I have a cassette player, but I'm probably literally never gonna play that.
It's
thing
a souvenir.
So unless like unless Ian and Chris are like really into tapes, I think it's highly unlikely that we're gonna go that route.
I actually went on eBay or something like that, and I found or Kijiji, and I found a guy who was selling old like TDK cassette tapes, and I went and met him, and I bought like I don't know like 200 of them for like $100 off of him. And then I went to a pawn shop, like pawn shops, trying to find like the double deck ghetto blasters. I don't know if we call those anyway. Is it? Can I call that a ghetto blaster?
I don't know. I think you might get canceled, dude.
Yeah, boombox.
Boombox.
To all this. I think you're just safer in case. And I had to sit there, and it wasn't even one of the. Remember in the back in the day where you used to hit and record, and you can hit the auto dub, and it'd be like, yeah. And it would go fast. This thing didn't have the auto dub on it, so I had to sit there and just do everyone manually. It took me like a week to make. Like,
you didn't.
It was ridiculous. Yeah, it was so crazy, and I made all the. I'll show you guys before I leave, but I made all the covers and stuff, like all by hand. Like I cut little things out with a razor blade, and then I went to the Staples and photocopied it all. Fucking, I called it the Goatest Hits. I just put every goat song on the cassette, and it barely took up one side. It was crazy. Yeah, it was good. And then I sold them, but they all sold. I sold them for like 10 nice. Bucks, and people were buying them.
Damn.
I just had a gig in December. I did an acoustic gig with that band Class of 91, and that guy Ian on the right there, he bought one. He's like, no, I gotta have one of them cassettes. He's an older guy, so
yeah.
Yeah, he bought a goat cassette. I'm like, enjoy that. I think I gave it to him, actually. Anyway, sorry. I got sidetracked.
Don't be.
Yeah. So, yeah, physical copies, I don't know. I don't think you could ever recoup your money anymore, either, because people aren't buying stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like so we have T-shirts, we have stickers, we have pins. I mean, I think, you know, really, it's... And I kind of feel conflicted about it, because I know that I really love kind of having physical copies of things, even if, you know, a lot of the times I'll buy a record and predominantly listen to the download, but I like having the record, but I think, you know, less and less people really seem like that interested in it. And when you look at what it costs to actually produce something, and you know, I still have boxes of Four Strokes CDs, boxes of Moral Hazard CDs, yeah. You know, it's,
I still have CDs, you know, from old band.
You can put it out, and especially like
yeah, the internet's an amazing thing. Like so many different platforms, right? Like what's the next one? Like
Facebook. At one point, we had our online presence was on like mp3.com, and then, you know, Facebook was where you were going to have your stuff, and sort of like you keep on migrating from platform to platform to platform. And so I guess that, like, the great thing about physical copies is that they're forever.
Super off the beaten track here, and
yeah, I really feel bad for you trying to edit this.
Oh, that's
something
okay.
coherent.
It's been worse. It's been great though. Honestly, like as long as it's good conversation, I don't care. Sometimes I'll just make them a little longer. But let's wrap up Cultural Treason because I still want to do our question game. So, what have you been doing? What does 2024 hold for Cultural Treason? You guys got a bunch of shows coming up. You got some plans? Any touring? Anything like that?
Right now, we just have one thing booked. We're going to Toronto at the end of May. We've got sort of a couple irons in the fire. Trying to get some things going, but unfortunately, as a band where everyone is a parent and everyone we've got kids, we've got day jobs, we've got relationships, we get show offers, and sometimes it's like can't make that happen.
Yeah,
but I think we're just looking forward to playing some more. Trying to get word out about the album, and meanwhile, like we're writing. We've got a few songs that we're pretty excited about. So
Ian's written some stuff too, where he's singing. So that's fun to have like a different dynamic in the band. I personally love performing. It's why I do this. So I just want to play shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I do. And shout out to you asked, how I'm in, the two bands and doing more music. I have to give a pretty solid shout out to my husband, who is also named Mike, and just holding it down on the home front so I can go and do whatever I need to do. I remember playing a ton of shows when my son was like 3 months old, and Ken was like, "Do you need more time off?" I was like, "Hell no!" I was like, "I need to play." I was like,
"Get me out of the house." Yeah. That's good to have a supportive other for sure, and hopefully they're a fan. Well, I don't know. Way to go, Mike!
Way to go, Mike!
Yeah, woo! Yep. You're a good guy,
solid guy.
Mm-hmm. Any shout outs on your end, Ken, before we,
I think shout outs to, band members past and present. So, Mott's Clayton, best wishes as you go on, and Chris and Ian, awesome to have you guys on board. Also my fiance, Yasemin, she's been Cultural Treason is kind of her, intro to punk rock, but she's been pretty tolerant of my needing to make time for practice and shows, so that's great. And my kid D, now that they're 16, it used to be my parenting weeks. I was pretty much kind of confined to quarters, but now D's like, hey, Dad, I know you're going off to your interview, so go have fun. I may still be up when you get home. So.
Freedom!
Yeah, you got that to look forward to in, like, what, 14 years?
Oh, man.
Awesome. All right. That was great. I have a game. I believe you both played it before, but I've refined the podcast a little, so it's a little different, but it's new. Everyone's lives change, things change, so maybe the answers will be a little different, but the questions are a little different, too. It's called 13 Questions with the Band. Are you up for playing?
I'm in.
I mean, if we said no, would it make a difference?
No.
Then we're
you
in.
You have to play.
Time for 13 questions with the band. Yes, this segment's back again. It's called 13 questions, but I only asked 6, maybe 5. Okay, we're back. This is called 13 questions with the band. I don't actually I have 13 questions. I don't actually ask 13 questions. I ask questions out of the 13 questions.
Oh, come on.
I just called it 13 questions with the band because I wrote a jingle and I'm too lazy to redo the jingle.
Which we just listened to, and it had a real catchy ring to it. I especially like that one part.
Part? So good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Okay. So this is 13 questions with the band with Deirdre and Ken from Cultural Treason. First question. Here we go. Let's do this one. Let's start off. What is the first record, CD, or tape you've ever bought with your own money?
I think that it was For Those About to Rock by AC/DC.
Mm.
I don't remember buying it myself, but I remember listening to Nirvana on cassette tape when I was super young.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
mm-hmm.
know if that counts.
Never mind, like the Nirvana album or
like the
before the like Nevermind. Is that what it was called? Yeah, yep. Nevermind. Nevermind. Yes. Yep. I believe that. I believe that CD was, or that cassette was in a lot of places that was being played.
In the 90s.
Okay, what is the first concert that you ever saw? Like, first live show you ever saw?
Oh, man, that I don't remember.
Big Country. So I don't know if the name rings a bell. They actually, I learned years later that that most of the band had been the core of a Scottish punk band called The Skids. But they had this great sound in the mid 80s where they'd sort of tweaked their guitars to sound like bagpipes and
oh god, that's awful. Yeah.
it was really good. You know, Google In a Big Country by Big Country and great song. Goodness. Great band.
In a Big Country by Big Country. I like yes. it. That's good. First concert.
Well, in terms of the music that I'm playing in this band, man, I've no idea. I want to say it was like Dropkick Murphys or something, but that's just like one of the ones I remember because it was like a big band. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I've been around music since I was a kid because of the Irish music. So I went to like concerts and I was always listening to music in pubs and stuff like that.
So the Irish Rovers is your answer?
Fucking... I don't know.
All right. Let's say it's the Irish Rovers. I don't know if it's the Irish Rovers. Maybe it is, though. Maybe it was. Members of. 6 degrees. Nine. What is that? 6 degrees of separation of the Irish Rovers. I like it. Okay. Next question. If you had a time machine and you could go back and witness any musical event, what would it be?
I would be really sort of struggling with myself. I think probably it would be going back and catching like the early Toronto punk scene in like sort of 1977, bands like, you know, the Vile Tones, the Ugly, stuff like that, especially like the Diodes, the Demics. Some of the bands that never even like got recorded even in that era.
I'd love to go to the UK, like to the original like punks.
Actually, you know what? I want to change my answer. I want to go back to the 60s and catch the MC5 when they were at their height.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And the Stooges.
Keeping it punk. I appreciate this. I get a lot of which would also be cool, but I get a lot of like Freddie Mercury at Live Aid. I get a lot of Hendrix burning his guitar. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
MC5
yeah.
in the 60s and UK in the 70s.
It'd be 70s, I think. Very yeah.
good. That's good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Represent the punks. Okay. Okay. Next question. Let's go kind of weird. In your opinion, what is the world's worst invention?
Oh, man. I was just thinking something sexual.
I mean, carry on.
I don't know.
You lead with that. And,
the medical device that women have to...
The duck or whatever it is?
The duck.
Okay, very good.
That's a horrible thing for any of you who know what I'm talking about, and for you guys who don't, learn about it.
I mean, I'm imagining and
warm it up. I mean, just warm it up a little bit. Like yeah. It just doesn't take much.
I mean, I'm sure I could come up with something better for worse if I cudgeled my brain. But right now, all I'm coming up with is like leaf blowers.
Leaf blowers. Okay, very good.
I like leaf blowers.
How do you feel about the internet?
What kind of question is that?
No, for the worst invention ever.
Oh, okay.
No, you thought that was the question? So, how do you feel about the internet, eh?
I never really thought much
how
about
it. How am I supposed to answer that? Oh my goodness. It's horrible, but amazing, and you can learn so many things, but like, my God, it'll scar you for life.
Yeah.
I think that would be my... maybe I should change the question, though. Maybe I'd say, what is the best and worst?
Best and
anyway,
worst.
Anyway, let's move on. We're getting hung up here. Okay. Have you ever had a music I was there moment? Like, say you were at Live Aid where Freddie Mercury was doing the... Ay-oh, like that kind of stuff? Let's just say.
So for... I probably have a few. The first one that pops to mind was in like the early 90s. I was sort of, you know who Nardwuar the Human Serviette
sure.
is?
Of course.
He was putting on like a garage rock festival in Vancouver. And at the time I was dating this woman who was playing keyboards in a garage rock band. So I wasn't really into garage rock. Like I appreciate it a lot more now. Mm-hmm. At the time it wasn't really my thing. But I went to this one show and I'm just sort of sitting there and I'm like, okay, who are these guys going on stage? And it's like, okay, there's seven people in this band. Well, that's a bad sign. And then I see there's brass instruments on stage. And I'm just like, No, I'm going to hate this band. And then they counted in, and it was Nation of Ulysses, and I was scraping my fucking brains off the ceiling the rest of the night. If you've never listened to Nation of Ulysses, just incredible, insane, just chaotic, sort of ranging from hardcore to jazz to just all over the place. So that was... That was just like one moment that just completely blew my mind musically.
He was there.
I don't know. I feel like I don't know how to answer that.
It could be a personal thing, too. It doesn't have to be like, I saw the Beatles. It could be like, I opened up for, I don't know. Do you want to pass? Do you want to take Ken's answer? It was pretty good.
I liked his
same.
Story.
Just say same.
Same. I wasn't there.
I mean, she was in Vancouver at the time. I mean, that's actually a funny thing about our band is that like at one time, you, me, and Ian were all living in Vancouver. That's super weird. But that didn't meet accurate. Until we all lived in Ottawa.
That is accurate.
Next question?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, all right. This is a new one that I was thinking about, and I don't know if it's going to work. So you're the guinea pigs for this one. Okay. If you could have one person in your band that isn't in your band, who would you like to have in your band?
John Card, on drums. He was in Personality Crisis, DOA, SNFU.
He was early SNFU too, like back in the.
Not original, but sort of, I think, second album or something like that.
Right.
So I have a dream of having a hype person on stage, like the guy from Slipknot, who's just like insane. And occasionally will climb on like a drum and like, I think, jump on that.
Did I just start a civil war?
But otherwise, like...
No, I kind of like this idea.
Yeah, like
a hype. Do you have a hype person in mind? Or
that person. From Slipknot.
Oh, okay.
Corey Taylor?
No, he's the singer. The hype person is just like one of the seven people on stage. I don't actually know their name.
Oh,
I should probably look it up.
I've seen those. Yeah.
Have you seen them?
It's like the guy in Mighty Mighty Boston who just danced. He just danced on stage.
That's all he did. I love that. I think that is such a wonderful thing. Because sometimes, you know, you're stuck on your mic. I'm behind the drums. Like, I can't really get up and like do that. And I think it's a really fun element to have on stage.
Very good.
Specifically that person, though.
I saw a band in Minneapolis called Billy Goat, and they had like they had this person that would dance around and had signs and all kinds of weird stuff and
the wacky arm flailing and floating.
The only reason I remember the band was because of that. So
right,
it makes a difference.
It's a very cool element.
We played with Masked Intruder, and they had the cop that didn't play or perform, but didn't play or sing, but was just there to be sort of like the hype person.
They have to be like wearing a mask or like very provocatively dressed. So you're just like, I don't get it, but it's working.
Right. and meanwhile, we're having this conversation and I was thinking of going and I didn't. But of course, like, you know, Gwar was in town 3 nights ago and you know, there's some hype for you right there.
Cool. All right. A few more questions and then we're done. If you could open for any band, Cultural Treason, Who would you want to open for?
DOA. Again.
I whispered a couple words into the ear of a local promoter. I don't know if you've heard of Dead Bob. It's a band that one of the members of No Means No Mm-mm. has going, but they've been touring around Western Canada, and apparently they're coming this way later on this summer. So it'd be awesome to get on a bill like that. I'm always down with the sort of the legacy Canadian punk bands or the bands that spin off.
Did you open for DOA last time they played at the Dom?
No, I don't know if it was last time. The last time we played with DOA was sort of a year and a half ago. Because
the last time they played at the Dom, I got COVID at that show.
You probably weren't the only one.
Maybe that was the show. I think it was with
Q.
Yeah. So that was us. So it was DOA, yeah, Q, and us. And that was like just a super spreader event. I know so many people.
Yes, unfortunately.
Including, I think, pretty much all of us. Yeah. That like, you know, walked into that show healthy.
You just
and
left with the vid.
COVID.
Woo.
I went there with Bob from the Riptides, and he didn't get it. I got it. About 4 days later, I was like, and then I tested. Anyway, okay, let's keep going. So what band would you want to open for?
Dead Bob.
Yeah, and next question is, what band would you want to open for you?
Oh, cool.
See, it's tricky here because you know, it's always hard to sort of
like a dream open or like a realistic like cut open for us right now.
I don't know. Have fun with it. Dead Bob.
Dead Bob.
DOA.
Passenger Princess.
They're good, eh? That band? Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about that band. I've listened to some of it.
I love the idea of like people playing in shows with us and thinking of myself and that point in my life and how excited I was to play shows and feel supported and you know, be like, you know, starting like a new band and being younger and just
that
feeling supported and not feeling like you got to scrounge up a show, like being asked to play at that point in your band is like such a great feeling. Being like, oh my goodness, we didn't have to ask a bunch of people. Someone asked us to do this.
That's super cool. Yeah, I've heard good things about Passenger Princess. Anyway, two more questions. One for each, or you can both answer. If you could have a drink with anybody, musician, live or dead, who would it be?
I'm going to say Brian Goebel, singer of the Subhumans. He died about 10 years ago. We were acquainted, I played with his band a few times, and we sort of had friends in common when I lived in Vancouver, but love an opportunity to just sort of like have a drink with him and just kind of like chat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Blind Boy from the Rubber Bandits. He actually has his own podcast, and he is a very, very interesting human. Mm. Absolutely eclectic, like music nerd genius.
Should try to get on his podcast. Tell him you're in a band called Wet for Days. I'm sure he'll let you.
Oh, yeah. He'd be into it.
He'd be like, interesting.
And Cultural Treason. He would just like dive in, investigate why.
There you go. Okay. Very good. The last question. Oh, it's a deep one for Cultural Treason. Who is Cultural Treason?
Oh, man. And it had a great like.
Wah-wah. It's got...
Cultural Treason has been voted the most likely to be nominated for an award that they made up themselves and does not actually exist.
First ever winners. Excellent. Thank you so much for being on, Deirdre, Ken. It's been a pleasure to see you guys again, and I wish you nothing but the best in the future.
Thank you.
And
you're
busy. Thank you very much, Mike. No problem. And thanks for inviting us back again.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. Any last words?
You are too modest. Don't cut it out.
I know, right?
Thanks for supporting local music and listening to this guy and listening to us talk for a little while.
Hey, you know what? I think that's some super good advice. I think everyone else should take that advice. Anyway, thanks again. That's the end of episode 128. Thank you so much to Deirdre and Ken for stopping by Southwood Studio and hanging out with me for a little bit and talking all things cultural treason. If you want to get a hold of me, you can always get a hold of me at egoandvice@gmail.com. If you want to listen to the podcast, if you want to know anything about the podcast, go to the website, egoandvicepodcast.com. It is the HQ, the hub, the home base of everything Ego and Vice, all things Ego and Vice podcast. That's it for me. My name is Mike. Thanks again, and we will see you next week. Bye.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker.